Welcome to the Game Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation.
You ready to go, Brad?
Yes, I'm ready to go. We're actually already starting.
Oh, dear. I better catch up then.
Yes, but I got to give people a warning here. Maria, Justine's dog, has been a little out of control. So if you hear barking in the background, don't worry. Justine is safe. It just means that Maria wants some attention. So, and we're just going to go with it. She can join the show today if she needs to.
Yeah, except, you know, the moment we say this, she's going to be quiet.
Well, that's fine, too.
Okay.
So what you got for us today?
Well, I've got a book that started out as a young adult series and is appealing to the YA reader. If we have any YA readers or listeners and you want me to do more YA books, then, you know, contact us, and then Brad will give you the contact information later in this segment. But the people I know who like this author love these books, and they work at the adult level too. Killian Kendall is a high school student. The book starts the beginning of school, and a new kid comes and sits next to Killian and then announces to the class that he's gay. About a week later, Killian figures out that he's gay too. And while he's dealing with that and trying to decide what he should come out or if he even feels comfortable with the whole idea, there's a murder. And Killian is stabbed, and he ends up spending a few days in the hospital unconscious. He has a punctured lung, and he takes some time to recover. He announces that he's gay. The father throws him out of the house, and he ends up moving in with the new kid's father. So after the murder, he is determined that he's going to solve the killing because the police aren't expressing any interest. So Killian is determined to figure out the murderer himself, and because the police don't, while he's dealing with coming out. And so this becomes the first book in the Killian Kendall series. It's called Bleeding Hearts by Josh Arovis. A-T-E-R-O-V-I-S.
I think that justifies a second spelling.
A-T-E-R-O-V-I-S. Yeah, this gives him a reason to go look at the show notes, Brad.
Yes, I'll have it in the show notes.
So, after a while, there's another murder, and there's another murder, and a few more murders, and eventually Killian does indeed figure it out. He does end up coming to terms with being gay. Along the way, he dates a girl in high school as a cover, and that gets him into the popular crowd and lets them ask some questions. Along the way, the girl that he's dating, Gilly, she has an Aunt Judy. Aunt Judy is psychic, and Aunt Judy sees some psychic abilities in Killian. And that's not explored very much in this first book. Later in the series, it comes into play more. There is indeed a paranormal aspect to the books. That is not the primary focus. There are real murders and real people being murdered. So, you know, when ebooks first came out in the year 2000, Brad, I had an ebook reader, and I had one of the first Gemstar readers. And eventually, the company went under, and the ebook reader went away, and I really missed it. And I every time there'd be a new ebook reader out, I'd beg people to try it so there'd be a market for it. And eventually Amazon came out with the Kindle, and you know, life as we know it is where we are now.
That must have been a while ago. I've never even heard of Gemstar.
Yeah, it was the year 2000, probably way before you were born.
I wish.
So, you know, now that they make a market for those books, then everybody's putting their books out in Kindle. So, you know, with the authors like Josh, he's got a 6th book in the being written. And I bet if everybody went out and bought the first 5 books in his series, all of a sudden he'd see a bunch of sales and he'd be writing that next book more quickly. So please go buy his book and read his books. he's got five books in the series. The second book is written from the point of view of two other characters, and Killian only shows up in a little bit in that book. He's really a minor character. And after that, though, the series focuses once again on Killian, and they're great books. He ends up joining a detective agency as an apprentice in the later books, and they become usual mystery genre and less of the YA. But regardless of which side of the fence you land on, they're good books that cross over genres.
Well, I'm glad you did a YA book. And first of all, there's a lot of really good ones, and these sound like one, a series. And we have, I know for a fact, we have quite a few writers who listen to this show and quite a few listeners who listen to this show. I mean, readers who listen to the show who are teachers. So yes, get them to listen to the show and at least recommend these books to them.
Yeah. This one, by the way, gets a thrilling recommendation.
Oh, thrilling.
The last few paragraphs are face-to-face with the murderer kind of stuff.
Anything from Recreate Tales this week?
Nope. In the Game is still out, still doing well. Ginny Kelly, Virginia Kelly, is a finance analyst in the 1980s, where it was dominated by white straight men, and she's dealing with that. She ends up going out to drinks with one of her friends, and then she discovers the next day that her friend's girlfriend was murdered right behind the bar where they sat, and she ends up having to find the killer.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah. You know how it is. You go out drinking, and the next morning you find out, damn.
Well, as I said last week, I bought the book the first day it came out, and I'm looking forward to jumping into it.
It's okay.
Probably, maybe, I'm not going to say next on my list, but it's high up there.
Good.
Okay, and before I forgot one thing before I let you go. Justine said I was going to give how to get a hold of us. The number to call is 424-328-1008. Call, leave a message, leave your name and where you're from. Just your first name is all that's necessary. Just
or no beware. Name. You can be anonymous. We're
be
fine.
Anonymous. Just but
we
just
don't
beware.
Need to check IDs.
No, we're not going to check IDs. Just beware. We may put you on the air, but maybe not. It's just one of those things.
We won't put you on the air if you don't ask us to. Tell us if we don't want to be on the air, we won't.
And then we'll just talk about what you said. Or maybe you can just say, this is for you only. Don't tell anybody else. So,
boy, we're really making it very complicated, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Okay. So that I think they get the point. So once again, have a great week. If you enjoy Gay Mystery Podcast, let others know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to our show. My guest today is Joe Cosentino. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. For those that don't know, Joe was voted favorite LGBT mystery contemporary author of the year by the readers of Divine Magazine for Drama Queen, the first Nick and Nora mystery. He also wrote the other 9 novels in the Nick and Nora mystery series and many other LGBT-themed novels, which have received Favorite Books of the Month awards and Rainbow Award honorable mentions. As an actor, Joe has appeared in principal acting roles in film, television, and theater. Opposite stars such as Bruce Willis, Rosie O'Donnell, Nathan Lane, Holland Taylor, and Jason Robards. He is currently chair of the department professor at a college in upstate New York and is happily married. Joe, let's start by talking about the Nick and Nora series, Nicky and Nora series.
Sure. Well, you know, you said the name of the first book was Drama Queen. That's a story of my life. So it's a good place to start.
Okay. Now, one thing that's different about this series than others is it has a lot of humor in addition to solving crimes. Mm-hmm. Would you call that madcap humor?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Obviously, there's mystery. They're whodunits, the Agatha Christie kind of classical, where you get the clues and you get the red herrings and you get the plot twists and turns and surprises and all that, and the big surprise ending where you say, how could I have missed it? How did I not guess this? So they're definitely mysteries, but they're definitely madcap comedy mysteries. And there's romance in there and good stories. I don't think that mysteries should just be mysteries. Whodunits are great, but I think you also need humor and romance and some good plot too.
You make me think of some of the madcap movies from like the 30s and 40s.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, they're definitely farcical and funny. And you'll find, this may sound cliche, but you find yourself laughing one minute and crying the next, because there's some serious scenes in there too. Nikki and Noah, throughout the series, meet, fall in love. There's some misunderstandings. They get together. They get married. They adopt a son. So there's also, their parents are in it. So there's also some tender things in there too.
Now, your most recent novel, which is currently available for pre-order, is Drama Fairy. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that novel.
Well, that's number 9. Nikki and Noah are college theater professors like me, but I'm more patterned after the department chair, Martin, their best friend, because I'm a department chair in my college. But they say write what you know about. And so I thought, where else is there more drama than a drama department of a college campus? It's pretty much, that's where you want to get it. So they, in each book, generally are working on a show. And in the context of the show, there are generally 5 murders per book. And then, of course, the police officers can't solve it. And so Nikki and Noah have to use their theater skills, like they dress up as other people, and they do interviews, and they do hiding places and spying on people, to finally, at the end, figure out, as they always do, who did it. And I like to say to my students and the other faculty in my department that if somebody ticks me off, I'll just kill them in the next book.
Well, with 5 murders per novel, I will say that is a college I would not want to attend.
And I joke about that a lot. The dizzy police chief, Manuelo, in the detective, in the story, he, I think, said, even in this book, in one of the books, he says, when a parent sends a child to the school, they should basically give them a tombstone as a gift, because everybody gets killed. But some of the books aren't on the campus. Drama Cruise, they go on an Alaskan cruise and they do a dinner mystery theater show. In Drama Luau, they go to Hawaii and do a luau. So they're not all on the campus. But Drama Fairy is back on the campus, book 9, and they're doing a Midsummer Night's Dream Shakespeare show. And of course, I have a lot of fun with the character playing Bottom and the fact that there's fairies everywhere. And there's, you know, romances, and they're doing the show, and there's divas, but sort of a story within a story, the same kind of things that are happening in the play A Midsummer Night's Dream are happening with the cast and crew off stage. And as I said, there's 5 murders, and somebody did it in the end. And Nikki always, at the end of each book, his life is in peril. He's just about to get killed. But of course, you don't kill your hero. And he always, at the end, finds the murderer.
Now, that book is already on pre-order, Drama Fairy.
Right.
And it releases February 1st.
Right, correct.
Now, is the ebook exclusively on Amazon?
No, it's everywhere. The ebook and paperback are everywhere. It's not, you know, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, all the different sources.
Pretty much everywhere you can find a book, you can mm-hmm. find Drama Fairy. Excellent. Now, I got to say, for me, I was in drama in high school, and we had one play, and I forgot my lines and really screwed up a whole scene. However, you and more than a few of our other guests have had a theater or television background. Mm-hmm. Do you know why that may be?
Yes, because I tell this to my students. I teach acting, and I tell my students all the time, Storytelling is storytelling. Whether you're acting, singing, dancing, writing, directing, you're telling a story. Even if you're painting a picture, you're telling a story. So it was not a big leap for me to go from acting to playwriting to writing novels. But the thing I love most, don't tell anyone this, but the thing I love most about writing novels is you can just do it by yourself. You don't need to collaborate with a million people and a million people telling you what to do or how you should write your play or how you should perform this part. You just sit in a room and you hear the voices. I laugh out loud, actually, when I Nikki has these funny statements. I put a lot of political little subliminal things in my books, and Nikki has pretty regularly these very funny sayings that just pop into my head. Like he'll say something like, I was happier than a priest at altar boy induction. You know, he's like really bizarre. You know, I was happier than a closet gay politician in the back room of a gay bar during a blackout. And he just comes up with these things. And I laugh out loud and then I write them. And so what could be better? Making yourself laugh.
I agree. There have been a few times. Mine is more of a traditional whodunit. But I do throw some humor in there. And there's times where I've made myself laugh out loud. And you really know you probably nailed it. Now, yes. I have gone and read it to my husband. And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, well, I thought it was funny. It stayed in anyway. So.
Yes, yes. Well, my husband is my first reader. I read, I write my books. I don't show them to anybody. My husband reads them. He tells me everything that's wrong. And he's always right. He's an audiobook narrator, by the way.
Oh,
he's always right. And he'll say this, this, this. I make my changes. And then it goes to the publisher and then the editor and all that. And then you work on it. But he's always right. In the beginning, we used to argue. But I found out he's right.
Somebody stepping away can usually get mm-hmm. a much different perspective than yourself.
Yeah.
So what was the journey that took you from acting and production and teaching to becoming a writer?
Well, I was acting until the work dried up. As you said, I did movies, TV, theater. I worked with famous people. And as a matter of fact, my mother the other day said to me, I remember seeing you do dinner theater with Nathan Lane. Isn't it interesting that he's a big star now and you're not? I said, well, thanks, Mom. But yeah, I mean, I did some good things. And then it started to dry up. And I always wanted to be a teacher. So I went back and got some advanced degrees and applied and luckily got it. I started part-time, then full-time, and now I'm the department chair. And so I really enjoy that. But by doing that, I couldn't really act or write plays so much because I was busy during the day. Couldn't direct plays except at the college because I was busy. So I thought, what can I do at night when I'm tired for about 2 hours every night before I go to sleep? And I thought, I can write a novel. So I started, actually, my first wasn't a mystery, though I'm a murder mystery fanatic. I've probably read every mystery as a kid even. I had insomnia as a kid and I couldn't sleep. And believe it or not, what put me to sleep were reading cozy mysteries. And I just love them. And I've always read them. And the Nikki and Noah mystery series are definitely cozy because it takes place in a college campus in Vermont. And everyone's always next to a fireplace and everything is white stone and white church steeples. And it's a beautiful campus. So they're definitely cozy mysteries. But my first book, believe it or not, wasn't a cozy mystery. It was for Dream Spinner Press and Infatuation, and it was an adaptation of a play that I wrote. So I started pulling out the plays I had written and adapted them for first Dream Spinner Press, and then I moved on to doing from romance to mysteries, which was always my first love. And I did, first thing I did for the Wild Rose Press were the Jana Lane mysteries. Jana is a movie star who solves murder mysteries, and there's some gay supporting characters in there, but no leading characters. And I said, I want to write what I really want to write, which is a cozy murder mystery that's funny, where the leading characters are gay. And I couldn't really find any out there. There's certainly a lot of gay theme mysteries, and I've read most of them. I mean, yours included, and they're terrific. John Michelson and, you know, many people who write really good gay mysteries, but not really cozy and funny and madcap, as you said. And I thought, well, you know what they say, if it's not there, do it. And so that's what I did.
You've kind of touched on this, so I want you to look back in the far reaches of your mind.
Okay.
What books or books are the earliest recollections that inspired you to become a writer someday?
Oh, this is easy for me, because when I read Armistead Maupin's Tales of the Cities, that was it. I had never thought of myself as a writer, only an actor. And I've read those books probably about 10 times because I am so honored when people say to me, I write like him. But it means it's no wonder. It's not that I'm copying him. But if you read somebody and you really idolize them, that, of course, that's going to come through in your work. And I love the fact that his characters are a little over the top. His situations are a little over the top. You're laughing out loud one minute, crying the next, really involved in the romance, and you are always surprised. When you turn that page, you don't expect what's going to happen next. And that's what I try to do in my books. I love the twists and turns. I like the surprises.
What queer mystery writers have given you inspiration?
John Michelson, as I said, probably more than anyone. I like your books. I think, you're a terrific writer.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. I owe you $5.
Mark Zerbo. There's a lot. But as I said, most of them are dark. And by dark, I don't mean bad. I mean more serious and heavier than mine. And I can't really find anybody who's writing like what I'm writing, which is good.
I can't think exactly. You found your own niche, and because I can't think of any either. I know some that have quite a bit of humor, but nothing like what your novels offer at all.
Yeah. Mine are definitely bordering on farce. And, the original, not that I'm copying any of the plots or anything, but the original Nick and Noah mysteries, they were, I think, in the 1930s, the Thin Man books, and then they made them into movies. And they were these socialites who got themselves involved in these madcap bizarre situations, and they would solve mysteries. So I didn't take any characters or plots from there, but I took the idea that you have these two people who are just having the time of their life in these outlandish situations solving these murder mysteries.
And they actually were one of the ones that I was thinking of when we were discussing the humor in your novels. So I'm not surprised that you brought them up as an inspiration.
Yeah.
What book are you currently reading?
Currently, I am, you're going to laugh at this,
I'm laughing already.
Yeah, but it's going to surprise you. But I fall in love with the Aunt Dimity mystery series, which is a straight mystery series. There is a gay couple in it, but they're a minor part. And it's about this woman who solves murder mysteries in her little cozy Cotswold village. I love the Cotswolds. I've been there many times in England. And the way she does it is she has this diary of her dead aunt. And every time she opens it, her aunt talks to her and kind of guides her through what to do. So for some reason, I don't know why, I'm just captivated by this series. There's about 25 books in it, and I just think it's hysterical.
Well, you know, sometimes we have no idea why. They just grab us.
Yes, we don't know why. Yeah. And I think that, but I'll tell you, it has influenced me, because at Drama Fairy is book 9 in the Nikki Noah Mysteries. I've written 2 more, so there's going to be 2 more coming out within the next year, Drama Runway and Drama Christmas. And then what I'm writing now is I've started a new murder mystery series, and there's a little element of the paranormal in it, a big element, actually, of the paranormal in it. And I think it's because I'm now been influenced by the Santimity series.
Now, do you plan to have as much humor in that series?
It's definitely going to be a comedy and romance, but it won't be madcap or forest school. The humor's a little bit more just like common, normal humor, not bizarre humor.
Not nearly as twisted and madcap.
Right, right.
Now, is there a writer you enjoy who you believe is underrated?
Well, me. You. The interesting thing is, it's hard for me to answer because in our niche, we know each other, but we're all underrated. In other words, if you look at all of the writers who are writing LGBT fiction, like, we know them, and we don't consider ourselves underrated or marginalized or unknowns, but I guess other people would. So probably everybody right now writing what we're writing, I would say all of us, because really the average people don't know us. We're not in all the bookstores. We're not in all the libraries. So probably most people, which is kind of sad, everyone should know us because we're wonderful.
I agree. And I was surprised. I've done a couple of interviews on some gay podcasts other than this one. Yeah. And it was surprising to me that they said gay mysteries, that's really a thing. That's something. Right. And they had no clue that we... So yeah. I agree with you. As a group, I think we support each other and we really honor each other. But there's a whole crowd of people out there that... we should be really jumping up and down and saying, look, we're here, we're here. And they're missing out, and we're missing out both.
I agree. And another example of this is logo. So we have this logo, LGBT channel, that shows reruns of Golden Girls and Married with Children for most of them. And then we have all these writers who are writing these amazing LGBT stories, many of them very theatrical, that, as a matter of fact, I actually did write a TV pilot for Drama Queen. And, you know, we've got them. They're there. They could easily be adapted. And when I contacted them, they said, oh, we're not doing an original. We're not doing novels and all this. We're just doing reruns of things and reality shows. We're not doing scripted things. Why?
And that's not how they started. That's really disappointing to hear.
Yes. Yeah. A good story is a good story. I really believe, I'll just use myself as an example, if the Nikki and Noah mysteries were on CBS, it would be a hit because, okay, the two leads are gay, and I always like to say Nikki ends up on top at the end and Noah's happy about it at the end of every book. But a good story is a good story. And I think that it has crossover appeal. I know the books do. And I know a lot of women who read the books. And even LGBT romance, the Dream Spinner stuff I write, most of that are read by women. So clearly there is crossover appeal. And so a TV show that's good is good. And if they did our work, I'll include you, all of us, the LGBT mysteries, on TV and maybe had an LGBT mystery hour, I bet a lot of the viewers would be straight, because if it's good, it's good.
That's true. And unfortunately, I think what you see is in a lot of the TV shows and movies, they just don't get the budget for it.
Yes.
I think the Donald Strachey movies is a good example. Excellent books. I think Chad Allen did an excellent job in the lead role, but it just didn't have the production value that a traditional movie would have. And it's very disappointing. So
it's like most of the LGBT independent movies, the budget, you can see the budget is so small that you're always disappointed by the movies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. In fact, Randy Quaid sued the producers of Brokeback Mountain because it was considered an art film with a low budget. And when it became a mega hit, he's like, well, wait a minute, I need more money than what they gave me. So yeah, that one just happened to luck out and break out because it was such a great film.
Mm-hmm.
So you're teaching and you're working and you found these 2 hours a night that you can start writing.
Mm-hmm.
What is the biggest surprise that you experienced after becoming a writer?
The biggest surprise is that I have so many stories in my head. People talk about that they're sitting there struggling for ideas. I have 3 ideas at a time. And over the 5 years I've been writing novels, I've written 25 books. And the ideas are there and they just keep coming. And I keep thinking of all these stories. And people talk about writer's block. I'm the opposite. I'm just thinking, make it stop for a day.
I'm the same way. I'm always surprised when I hear people say, I can't come up with ideas. I wish they would turn off as well. Well, we're gonna break here for a few minutes to do a little fun.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you the awkward question writers get.
Okay.
Okay. So give me a second here and I'm going to spin the wheel.
Okay.
Okay. Your question is very good because it has to do with a question that your mother asked you regarding Nathan Lane. Your awkward question writers get is, how come I've never heard of you?
Right, exactly. Well, what makes me laugh, I totally agree with that, but what makes me laugh is so many people I know, family, friends, or people you meet or whatever, they'll ask me so many questions about my books and isn't this fascinating? And then you see them again and you say, have you read any of my books? No. Well, why did you ask me all these? It's not like you can't get them. They're on Amazon, Kobo, every Barnes & Noble, anywhere you go, my website, you know, you can get the books. Many libraries have them. So they're an ebook. Many are audiobook. They're all paperback. So there's no excuse. And so I often wonder about that myself. But to answer your question seriously, I think the reason people don't know is because we're not in the bookstores. And though bookstores are dying and Amazon and the online market is growing, you know, if you're not in those airline bookstores, it's hard. It's hard for people to know you exist. And we do a lot of publicity, but mainly we're approaching people who read what we write. We're not... At least I'm not. I'm not putting my money into taking ads out or television commercials or anything like that. I'm mainly doing things like this because I'm approaching the audience that reads what I write. But yeah, it is true. Why don't people know us? They should. It's like when you go to the movie, go to the mall and you see all the movie posters and every poster is a heterosexual theme movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that art house movie that's better than any of those, but people haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the ones they show in the afternoon and everybody talks about how brilliant it is.
Right.
But by everybody, I mean the few that actually show up to watch the film.
Right.
Because it's an art film.
Right, so. Right. But on the other side of that, though, I'm always surprised when via my website or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, I hear from these readers and they'll say, oh, I just read your, say, Drama Queen. I love it. I'm going to read all the books in the series, whatever they say. I'm always surprised. I always think, well, how do they know about me? So that's the other side of it when I get... And I'm sure you do too. People you don't know, which is wonderful, say, "Oh, I've read this and I loved it," and you wonder, but gee, how do you know about me? So it works both ways, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It does. And I do have good news for you. You said the bookstores are dying. I wish I knew the source. It was a good source. Printed that just last week that in the past year there have been more bookstores opening than closing.
Okay. And
apparently, that's the first time in years.
Yes.
I think independents are making a comeback.
Oh, good. I hope so.
Yeah, I do too.
Now they have to carry all of our books, though.
Well, and if they're independents, there's a better opportunity for that. But
right.
You're right. They do like to have the big names right in the front window.
Yes, actually, another publisher I work with, Nine Star Press, has my Cozy Cove 5 novels, which is kind of like an Armistead Maupin's. Actually, the critics called it a cross between The Love Boat and Fantasy Island, but it's a series. It has some mystery in it, but it's like a serial. And they just sent out an email that they're going to get books in these independent bookstores. So I hope all of our books are there, especially the mysteries. Hopefully there'll be a gay mystery section. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, we're going to have to fight hard. I'm a member of a group here in L.A. I'm not as active as I should be, but we are going to each independent bookstore and saying, we want a shelf of L.A. writers.
Good.
And there's a large number of LGBT writers that mm-hmm. are in part of that shelving, and they've been somewhat successful. So I wish I could say we've been somewhat successful, but eventually I'll jump on the bandwagon more. So it's just going to take a little more work on behalf.
Yeah, well, I'm in New York, so if we did that here, that would be good for me.
Yes, definitely go for that. You were talking about your fans. Mm-hmm. What is something memorable you have heard from your readers or fans?
What I really love, and this is part of what I was talking before about the cozy mystery genre, is when people say, oh, I was so upset about such and such. I read your book and I laughed so hard. I got so involved in the mystery that I forgot about my problems. What a gift that is. I mean, you can't, as a matter of fact, this one, she's a blog reviewer, actually, told me, and this is absolutely true. I love her. She's great. She told me, I won't say her name just in case this is private, but she said that her husband was dying and she read him one of the Nick Yanoa mysteries and he got better. So I healed her husband.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
He was laughing.
It is great that you can bring joy to somebody for, you know, at least a day.
Well, laughter is the best. Yes, laughter is the best medicine. You've heard that.
Yes, I have heard it, and it's definitely true. Yeah. A lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
So if a reader wants to reach you, what is the best way for them to do so?
My website, which is my name, joecosentino.weebly.com. joecosentino.weebly.com.
And I will make sure I have that in the show notes as well.
Great.
And again, your novel, that your most recent novel is currently on pre-order. Drama Fairy, currently on pre-order, and will be available most everywhere.
Yes, yes. And people should, if they've never read any of the Nick Yanoa mysteries, they really should read at least one just to see how truly different they are than most of the books out there.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Before we go, I do want to mention one thing, that I do fundraising for GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, and I give 10% of all my royalty money to them. So I just wanted to mention that, shout that out.
I'm glad you did. That's a good addition to that. So something readers should know. Okay. Well, thank you again for being on the show. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much. It went by like it was 2 minutes.
It did, and you gave me some good laughs. Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.